calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Tuesday Timeline. I'm Elio, he's Ben. Ben, what's going on?
Not much, man, not much. I have spent so much time getting ready for this show. It is ridiculous. The amount of wrestling that I've watched over the last 3 days, not including Raw from last night, probably exceeds 10 hours.
Wow.
So, at the very least, you guys can't say we don't prepare for these shows.
Right. That's a lot of hours.
Yes, and last night in particular, I watched the New Japan New Beginning Night 1, which is part of what we're going to cover after we cover the main topic of tonight's show. So I'll let Elio fill you in on that as we get started.
First of all, though, we have to say, so we had two people having birthdays last week. Last Thursday, we had the Lone Wolf, Andy Anderson, and on Sunday, we had Tony Diaz. So happy birthday.
Absolutely.
So I hope they had a great day. And, of course, actually, yeah, my dad's birthday was on the 22nd as well.
Oh, well, isn't February just full of fun?
Right.
February is not my cup of tea. It's just too damn cold.
Yeah, I mean, and you ever have one of those days where you wake up and before you know it, the day's completely gone by and it's over?
Yes.
That's what I had on Sunday because, like, 1 minute I woke up, and then before I knew it, the whole day was done, and it was almost Monday. So,
I had one of those days. I had that experience yesterday because of all the wrestling I had to watch.
So, like Ben said, we've got Royal Rumble 1990 and New Japan. The New Beginning in Sapporo, which took place on February 23rd. So, Ben, before we do that, however, you know my weekly ritual. You know where I have to go.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Born on the 4th of July. Nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture of the Year, Best Actor, Tom Cruise.
Just help me, Jesus. Help me to make the right decision.
Best Director, Oliver Stone. And Best Screenplay, Oliver Stone and Ron Coleman.
It's been a long way for us. Maybe we're home.
Tom Cruise, born on the 4th of July.
Now playing at theaters everywhere. Consult your local listings.
That was kind of a short trailer. I don't really know.
Yes, that was quite anticlimactic.
However, I guess whatever. We'll have a better movie next time because this wasn't exactly one of my favorite movies. Like, there was so much talk about it when it was released. Everyone was going on about this movie, and I just didn't get it. I've never really been a big fan of, like, war movies.
Well, I like some war movies.
Yeah,
when they get too graphic, that's when it's
That's what I'm talking about. Like, when they get, like, really graphic and stuff, it's like, okay, yeah, time out.
Yeah.
But now, Ben, we are going to take a look at WWF Royal Rumble 1990. So, hold on. Local, we're in Orlando, Florida. Local time is 4 p.m. I love these 4 p.m. start times.
So first and foremost, this is a weird show, folks. I almost don't know how to approach this because, if I'm being honest, everything leading up to the Royal Rumble was a struggle. And in order for me to make the matches leading up to it worth it for you to hear about, there's a lot of, well, not a lot. I guess there's background that has to go into this. Now, I don't remember the Bushwhackers being this fucking annoying.
Okay, first of all, you know what? I'm going to tell you right now. I love that you're getting to see these early Royal Rumbles. You're getting to see how they went, how they started, and the difference between then and what they've become today. But also, this Royal Rumble in particular, there's only one match that I actually remember, which is pretty sad, and that's the Genius and Brutus Beefcake. I did not remember a single match from this Royal Rumble.
Well, to be honest with you, brother, they're not very memorable, like I said, unless I, you know, kind of delve you into some of the backstory, which is what I'm going to do. Otherwise, this would be a very lackluster podcast to host and a very lackluster podcast to listen to. However, don't turn us off just yet. Give me a chance here.
Because we're here with 1-year-old Ben and 14-year-old Elio. Because I'm not 15 quite yet. No, 16. I'm not 16 quite yet. I'm 15 still.
Yeah, so he's drastically older than me, and even today I'm drastically more attractive. What? No, I'm kidding. I have to fuck with my co-host since he has to mess with me with those fucking creepy pictures every week.
No, but seriously, like, I do not remember any match on this card, like, until I started sitting down to watch it the other night. So let's go. Yeah, so let's go. Match number one.
So we have the Bushwhackers and the Rougeau brothers. The Bushwhackers playing the hooray.
Right, and this one's, I didn't even know they were still working a program like from WrestleMania 5. Come on, what?
Yeah, this is a little bit long in the tooth at this point, wouldn't you say? You know, the Bushwhackers, as I remember them, were not this bad. But this was, they were a lot more gimmick than they were substance. You know, what I'm looking at here is any reflection.
Now, I think I think the Bushwhackers could have done well in the Attitude Era under their original name, the Sheepherders.
Well, yes. And I'm glad you bring up the Sheepherders because that gets me into my point. The Bushwhackers, as, you know, listeners our age would know them, were not a comedy team when they were the Sheepherders. They were, like, very much hardcore wrestlers. So the fact that they went from that to this given the fact that it's WWF and what WWF was in the 80s, their gimmick change doesn't surprise me, but the fact that their matches weren't very entertaining does, because I've seen what the Sheepherders were capable of back in the day.
Have you watched some of their matches?
I've seen some of their clips in passing, yes.
Oh, okay. Right. They were bad.
Yes.
They were mean.
Like, and for instance, right? So at the very beginning of the match, I'm already getting annoyed because before the bell, either Butch is licking Luke or the other way around, or but then even when the bell rings, Butch counters his way out of a sleeper and immediately bit Ray Rougeau on the ass and the referee on the ass.
I'm not sure who, I don't know who is more annoying, Luke or Butch. I'm going to go with Butch, though, because he's always been the more annoying one for me.
Well, I'm going to go with Butch. I have no desire to see a man bite another man's
ass. Oh, that just sounded so wrong. Ben, you're going to give our listeners nightmares. Stop. Don't do that.
Well, this gave me nightmares, so they got to share in my pain. And what was even more nauseating is that the fans loved it. I don't understand.
I don't get it.
So then later on in the match, we have, first of all, Jesse Ventura and Tony Schiavone were going back and forth in this match because, much like me, Jesse Ventura is like, the Bushwhackers are disgusting. And then, of course, Tony Schiavone is defending them, which I am fully in support of Jesse the Body Ventura.
Jesse Ventura is a smart man. He knows what he's talking about.
Exactly. So I never thought I would agree with a man wearing a Mickey Mouse t-shirt live on pay-per-view. But it's the 80s and here we are. God, it's fucking weird. The Rougeaus got control back after Ray Rougeau got in a cheap shot to the back and choked one of the Bushwhackers out with the tag rope. I forget which one, I'm sorry. And then shortly thereafter, we have Luke once again with the biting. Goddamn, I hope they don't have rabies.
Right?
Which, according to their gimmick, you never know. I don't know.
Right.
And then Luke bit Ray again. And then Jox got very tired of it and stomped him out. Luke was taking the vast majority of punishment in the beginning, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Because, what are you doing biting somebody? It's disgusting.
Stop it. Unsanitary.
Yes. So they're jamming him into the turnbuckle numerous times, and then they dropped him throat first on the tag rope, which always struck me as a very dangerous move in all seriousness, because the ropes are not ropes, they're more like tightly taut cables. And yeah. I'm not just saying that because of what other people say. I say that because I've felt them before.
And is why McFoley's missing an ear.
Yeah. So it's just I'm not really sure why that's going on. So then, after Butch is taking all this punishment, they do the classic hot tag bit after the Rougeaus had cut him off several times. So Luke gets the hot tag to Butch, and then Butch gets in there and does a little bit of damage until Jimmy Hart grabbed Luke's foot to try to reverse the momentum and prevent the double team move. I think he was what I think he was trying to prevent the battering ram, if I'm not mistaken,
That's
which
where
was.
that's where Luke has Butch in a headlock, and he charges forward into his opponent's midsection. Yeah, it's a battering ram. That's a battering ram.
They well, they're just calling it a double team move, but it looked like the battering ram to me. But
No, that
anyway,
no, that's the battering ram. They can call it a double team move all they want. That's what the what's called battering ram.
okay. Thank you, because I pay attention and I'm like, but I thought that was the battering ram. Anyway,
There you go. You're right. You are correct, sir.
so the Rougeaus saved Hart after the Bushwhackers caught him for getting involved and were about to beat his ass in the ring. And then, of course, Jimmy Hart crawled away like a little bitch. That's always funny.
I'm
The
sorry, Ben. I'm sorry. I have to say, after you bring up Jimmy Hart, I don't know if you read this
Yeah.
about Jimmy Hart. Apparently, we're gonna come back to present time for just like a second because Jimmy Hart is willing to come back to the WWE to manage Pretty Deadly.
No, no,
That's
no.
a rumor. I was just reading a rumor like the other day. I'm
But
like, no, don't go on.
don't. And I don't say that out of disrespect for Jimmy Hart. Hear me out, because Jimmy Hart is one of my favorites. I
Yes.
wouldn't necessarily put him in like the greatest manager of all time,
See, he's doing Bobby Heenan.
but yeah, I mean that's reserved for people like Bobby Heenan, people
Yeah.
like Paul Heyman, people like that.
Yeah.
But having said that, Jimmy Hart is an absolute icon.
Right.
And he should not besmirch his reputation with the likes of
No.
Pretty Deadly. Now, don't get me wrong, folks. Okay? I understand and can see that Pretty Deadly is a very talented tag team. In my opinion, don't shoot the messenger, this is just my opinion. Their gimmick distracts me from all their talent, because
Yep.
what the fuck are they wearing?
Exactly.
What the fuck is the yes boy? It's just my mom is gonna come in and you're saying, what the fuck are you talking about? It's very distracting. And it takes away from their talent, in my opinion. But no, Jimmy Hart, please don't do that.
Yeah. I just wanted
You've
to
had
bring it up
two.
because I forgot to tell you the other day.
So getting back into the match, we finally get the end of the match after Luke tripped up Jacques and Butch went. And Butch finally did, and I'm sorry, I'm all tongue-tied. And the Bushwhackers, I keep wanting to say Bushwhackers, you can kind of understand why. Finally hit the battering ram after numerous attempts, which ended with Butch pinning Jacks for the pinfall win in about 13 and a half minutes. Now, what was interesting about this, and I found this out after doing research, Ray Rougeau actually retired after this match.
Yeah.
This was his last match with the company. However, He did have a very lengthy run as a French commentator with
Yep.
the company. He actually had two runs with the company. He had one from 92 to 2002, and then he came back 2017 to 2021. And in between all of that, he pursued politics.
Wow,
I'm
cool.
not sure. I'm not sure in what capacity, but I looked it up and I did some research on him, and that's what I found out.
Cool, and I know that. Well, I knew this first run. I knew his two runs. I did not know the politic part.
Well, then the teacher just learned something from the padlock.
There you
There we go.
go. Mm-hmm.
Now, okay. If we were doing the, well, first of all, next up was a wonderful promo by Ted DiBiase. I love DiBiase's promos about the Rumble spots and trying to negotiate for better Rumble spots. We got that in the last Rumble that we covered, which was Royal Rumble 89. He was trying to negotiate with oh God, who's
Slick, slick, slick.
yeah, I just couldn't think of the manager's name. But this time his attempts were unsuccessful, and he did draw number one to enter first. Now, this was hilarious. Him and Gene Okerlund got in a tug of war for the canister with the number in it because, being the esteemed reporter that he is, Gene Okerlund wanted to see what the number was. It was hilarious. But yeah, so that's definitely a promo worth watching. What's not worth watching is the genius, aka the brother of Randy
Oh,
Savage,
this was so
versus
bad.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
And we got a ref bump in this match.
Oh my God.
This match was atrocious. I can't tell you how much I can't stand Bruce Beefcake. He is just terrible.
But at the very least, Mr. Perfect attacked Beefcake and
Thank
hit the
you.
perfect plex on him
Thank
and
you.
the belt. But well, I'm sure he would tell us you're welcome if he could. But I've always had a great affection for Mr. Perfect. What was hilarious is the bell rang even though the referee was down. So, they were calling for the double
Not
disqualification
yet.
even
Okay,
though the
wait,
ref
hold
was
on,
down.
hold on. Hold on. This confuses me. Did Brutus Beefcake do anything to get disqualified?
No.
So
I don't believe so.
how can this be a double disqualification?
I don't know because Beefcake was the one getting his haircut.
You mean the genius?
I'm sorry, the genius. So
But this was confusing, and it's sad that this is the one.
I guess that was the grounds for the disqualification. That's the only thing I can think of.
And this is sad. This is the only match I remember on Royal Rumble 1990. I'm sorry, but yeah, this match was bad. Watching it back, it's terrible. It was so bad.
It was so boring. And that's the nicest thing I can say about it. Now,
Yep.
next up was slightly better because this was the blow-off match to the feud between Rugged Ronnie Garvin and Greg the Hammer Valentine. which this feud has been going for the last couple of pay-per-views.
I know your question's probably coming up, right?
Yes, the first one, yes.
All right.
So why don't we take a break right here before we get into this next match, and we'll be right back.
All right, we are back. We are going to continue our look at Royal Rumble 90, and we are on to the next match, Ronnie Garvin versus Greg the Hammer Valentine. This match goes all the way back to SummerSlam of the prior year, SummerSlam 89, and okay. It's because I have to think about this, Ben, so I'm going to clear this up for you.
Okay.
Basically, Valentine started wearing this knee brace or this... you saw it in the match. He had that brace on his...
Yes.
He initially said he was wearing it because of an injury. However, many months later, he's still wearing the brace, so now it appeared that he was wearing it so that when he locks the figure four in on his opponents, it adds pressure. So Ronnie Garvin took exception with that, and that's where the feud began.
Oh, okay.
And I wasn't the biggest Ronnie Garvin fan, but this match was... It was just okay. I don't really care about these two.
Well, look, it was the best.
Yeah.
It was the best bit of business I've seen out of them from this whole feud. I didn't even understand why they were feuding. So
that's why I just cleared it up, because I was a little confused on how this feud began. So that was why, Garvin took exception with Valentine injuring wrestlers with the knee brace he supposedly was using for an injury.
Cool. Thanks for clarifying that. So that explains kind of why it was a submission match and why they were focusing on the knee thing that the Hammer was wearing. I thought it looked more like a knee sleeve kind of thing, but
I'm looking up Ronnie Garvin right now. So Ronnie Garvin was born in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and he is related to Jimmy Garvin. Because Jimmy Garvin is not related, but Jimmy Garvin is his stepson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I didn't even know that, because how in wrestling they say, these two are brothers, Undertaker and Kane are brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know that, so I had to look that up. So that was interesting that they're actually family.
Yeah, it is. That's kind of cool, though. Well, Jesus, Jimmy Garvin is 71, so I don't think it would be a matter of stepson. Let's see how old Ronnie Garvin is.
Ronnie Garvin is 78.
And his stepson is only 7 years younger than he is?
Yes. I'm looking up right now. I have it in front of me right now.
Jesus Christ.
I'm telling you, bro. This is how it is. Garvin owns several used car dealerships in Gaston County, North Carolina. Garvin is an accomplished pilot. His stepson, Jimmy Garvin, became an airline pilot in his retirement from wrestling. So, when I read stepson, I was like, okay, sure.
Hang on. So what I'm reading, not that I don't believe you, but I'm just saying.
No, I know. Go on. It's weird.
Good Lord. So he is, holy fuck. See, that's just weird. No, you're right, but that's just weird. I don't know.
Right?
Because one, that the math just isn't adding up on that one.
No, it doesn't.
I suppose. But yeah, getting back to the match. I'm sorry, we got sidetracked on our own sideboard here.
Oh, by the way, bit of trivia: the Garvin stomp. That's the same move that Randy Orton had in his repertoire when he used to do the Orton stomp on his opponent before
the RKO. I noticed that.
Yeah.
I noticed that in the match. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was the best piece of business that they did. I thought that it maybe went too long, but I would gladly give this match a 3 stars. Like Elio said, we did see the Garvin stomp, which would later become the Orton stomp. That was pretty cool because I didn't know that Garvin used that move. And then obviously another big story was the knee brace or knee sleeve that Hammer was wearing, because that was kind of the origin of the feud, and that played into trying to lock in the figure four story.
The one part of this match that bothered me when Valentine had Garvin in the figure four, and Garvin's like making faces at him.
Well, because he was laughing at him, and I'm like,
I just thought it was weird.
That was just kind of weird. Yeah. So like I was trying to figure out, was he trying to sell it or no sell it or what the fuck?
Yeah, he's like no selling it because he's wearing his own brace, so it's not doing anything to him. And meanwhile, he's looking at Valentine with the making the stupid faces.
Yeah, and the other thing that really annoyed me about this match is it was very clear from the get-go that it was a submission match. And multiple times, not just once, multiple times, each wrestler went for pinfall combinations. whether it be inside cradles or regular pins. And I'm like, how stupid do you have to be? And this match went 16 minutes and 55 seconds. The wrestlers were made to look stupid, like they didn't even know what the stipulation was.
Right.
Okay, like maybe you can pass it off, like in the heat of battle, maybe they did it once, but not two or three times.
I know, right? Stop.
The fuck? But that being said, it was a good match from a wrestling perspective, and you know, having been able to follow the feud, it was a very good blow off for the feud, because it really did feel like a fight, which is a rarity for some of these matches in the 80s, which feel like a little cartoony. Other than the pin thing, that was the only thing that pissed me off. So if I had to pick a high point out of matches that wasn't the Royal Rumble, I would give it to this one, the submission match.
Yeah.
Right here.
Because these other matches were atrocious.
And, well, speaking of atrocious, and I actually texted you this, and you were confused as to whether or not I skipped the whole rest of the show, but I just skipped this segment. The Brother Love Show with Sapphire and
Sensational. You know what, Ben, you just found your fuck off moment of the week.
Yes, there you go. Would you like to play the song in honor of the fuck off movements of the week, or do you want to debut that?
We'll save it for the main show.
Okay, very good. But it was like, okay, there have been several occasions where I have found the Brother Love show to be entertaining, right? And where we've seen important happenings.
I just like when the wrestlers kick his ass.
Well, exactly. But the last two times that I have seen it on the shows that we've covered on this show, with WrestleMania 5 and then this show right here.
I forgot to SummerSlam 88. I totally forgot that they had one on that show as well.
Oh my god. Well, I know the last two were just atrocious. The one with Morton Downey Jr. and of course this one with Sapphire and Queen Sherry. Oh my dear lord. Good god. You know, and the thing that makes this more bothersome, and maybe this is just me being a prickly bitch again, is this set up a tag team match, an intergender tag team match at WrestleMania between Dusty and Sapphire and Randy Savage and Sherry, right?
Yep.
Why couldn't it have just been Dusty Rhodes versus Sensational Sherry?
Wait, what?
Like, I don't understand why the match couldn't have just been Dusty Rhodes versus Macho Man Savage at WrestleMania.
That's why I said what, because the first time you said, why couldn't it have been Dusty Rhodes versus Sensational Sherry? I was like, what?
Well, I was distracted by the fact that you changed my name to Prickly Bit. Yes, Elio was having fun behind the controls of our Zoom meeting. Jesus Christ. But yeah, this was, if we were doing traditional high points, low points of pay-per-views, this would definitely be a low point. And as a matter of fact, so would Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Big Boss Man.
This was another one.
Like, why? And I don't remember them feuding leading up to this.
No,
do you?
I don't recall any feud between them leading up to this.
Okay, so
in fact, you know what? I'm gonna look that up because now it's gonna bother me.
Please do, because I was very bothered by this. You know, the only high point of this match was when Big Boss Man hit a high drop kick on Duggan. I swear to God, that was the only high point. Otherwise, it's like, why did you have a DQ finish with the nightstick at 10 minutes and 24 seconds if it was just going to be a DQ finish? I swear to Christ.
So I'm just gonna go and Google it real quick. That's all there is for this match.
Yeah, well, I'm not gonna waste any more time with it because that's how bad it was, and it was the second DQ finish on the show.
No, that's why.
What the fuck?
That's why I was asking, because I'm gonna do this. All right, so Ben, I looked up the Bossman Duggan thing, and I don't even remember this, but apparently Jim Duggan started a feud with the Bossman in the fall of 1989, and culminated with this match at the Royal Rumble.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess
I mean,
it's like you said while we were on break, it must have just been a holdover feud until Boss Man got to his next one.
Well, and we'll get into his next one because it's going to take place shortly before WrestleMania 6.
Yeah, so we'll have plenty of time to get into that because recovering WrestleMania 6 on next Tuesday's show, which is already going to be episode 15.
I'm sorry, hold on, wait, because you were telling me this earlier. You wanted to do New Beginning Night 2 next week, and you wanted to give WrestleMania its own show.
Right, but then we.
Oh, wait, yeah, no, never mind. Forget what I said.
Yeah.
We're gonna cover next Tuesday WrestleMania 6. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so Ben, let's get into the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
And
out of all the Rumbles so far, that we've covered as part of this series, this is the best one. Now, this was the second one on pay-per-view, but remember that this was the third one overall because we had 87, 89, and then this one.
Well, we had 88,
89. Oh, yeah. Yes, 88, 89, and then this one.
Yep.
So, as I said, and we're not going to go over this entire match because there were 30 entrants, and if we did that, we'd be here all night long.
We could go list off the names of the entries.
Yeah, I mean I got that right here. So we'll do that first. So the number one entrant was Ted DiBiase, number two, Coco Beware, number three, Marty Jannetty, number four, Jake Roberts. He got a massive reaction. I really appreciated that. Number five, Randy Savage, Macho King.
I drew number five because we drew numbers for the Rumble.
Yeah, you drew. What did I draw?
You drew number nine. Look at your name.
Oh, bet. Yes, I got a bad tick. Bad news, Brown.
However, you lasted longer than I did.
Well, that's true. Which was an absolute shock. Truly.
Go on.
But we'll get into that a little bit early, a little bit later on. So number six, Roddy Piper. Number seven. Was the War Lord. He did not get eliminated instantaneously. Eight was Bret Hart. Nine
with was Bad News Pierce.
Yes, aka Bad News Brown.
This time you didn't eliminate yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Number 10 was Dusty Rhodes. Number 11 was Andre the Giant. Once again, I have to say, it was so sad to see Andre at this point in time.
Yeah.
But as we'll get into in a minute, he immediately started eliminating people, so at least he had that. Number 12 was the Red Rooster. Number 13...
Was it Axe? Yes.
And number 14 was Haku, who finally dropped the King moniker. I was very happy to.
Yes, wow. He lost it to Duggan, who lost it to Savage.
Exactly. And remember, this was a cool little reminder because I had actually forgotten about this. Because remember, Andre and Haku were once a tag team called the Colossal Connection. Can you imagine running into those two motherfuckers in a dark alley? I mean, good God. Or trying to get into a firefight with those two men. Good Lord.
And at this point in time, they were the tag team champions.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, you got Haku who bites people's noses off, and then you got a 7-foot giant who can drink 100 beers without getting drunk.
Right?
Good Lord.
I want to be friends with those two.
Yes, indeed. I would pick my friends wisely on that occasion. But honestly, who would want to piss Andre the Giant off? Like, seriously.
Bandy Sprout did, and he got put down for it. He backed it down from Andre.
Oh, good Lord. Well, that's not good. So, number 15 was Smash. Of course, the other half of Demolition. Akeem, the African Dream.
Oh my God! I'm gonna play a clip for you off air about something I saw on TikTok. These people that call themselves fans are. But I want to ask you, what do you think of Akeem? I know the character is bad. I mean, what do you think of the guy, Akeem? Woman gang, whatever you want to call him.
I drastically prefer the one man gang gimmick. I thought he was much better under that gimmick.
Okay.
But yeah, I overall I thought he was overused.
Okay.
So number 17 was Superfly Jimmy Snuka. Number 18 Dino Bravo. 19 was Earthquake. 20 Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Mm-hmm.
21 Ultimate Warrior.
The one spot that stood out for me, and I remember when I was watching this live, was a Hogan and Warrior spot in the Rumble.
Yes, and it really did. The energy, you could hear it, you could feel it. The energy really did pick up when the Ultimate Warrior entered the arena. And I'm not just saying that because of the energetic nature of his entrance, like the tone of the announcers, the electricity in the crowd, everything changed. Yeah. And it became important because even though like this Rumble was the best out of the three, I was still struggling to figure out what they were fighting for. And my question to you is coming up very soon. So hang tight with me for just one second, and we'll get to it. So number 22 was Rick Martel, who obviously went directly at who would clearly go after Tito Santana, who coincidentally came out directly after him. So that was a nice touch because the two could immediately, continue their feud and have a nice little story intermingled in the Rumble. So that was pretty cool. 24 was Honky Tonk Man. And 25 was Hulk Hogan. Now I'm gonna jump the gun a little bit, but don't worry because we're still gonna cover the Rumble and all the exciting parts and all of that. I just have a question for Elio.
Yes, sir.
And that is, Hulk Hogan was the champion coming in, correct?
Yes.
So why was he in there if he's the champion? What are they fighting for? If not,
you know, this is just like Royal Rumble 88. There was nothing to this match. It was just a regular battle royal. There was nothing the winner didn't get anything. So I think this was just to highlight the Ultimate Warrior as an Intercontinental Champion, and and Hogan winning, I guess, I don't understand myself, like, how, why this happened, but I guess they were pushing the Warrior.
Well, I mean, you know, given how WrestleMania 6 turned out, and you know, it works out wonderfully that we're talking about WrestleMania 6 next week, given that this is such a big topic within this Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
You know, so given what happens at WrestleMania 6, this makes sense. But if you take into account what the Rumble became in WWE history and these early Rumbles, it's like, what?
See, that's why I said this is cool. You're getting to see the early Royal Rumble. So right now, they're just regular matches because the winner getting a championship match at WrestleMania didn't begin until Royal Rumble 93.
Very good.
That was the first Rumble where that stipulation came into play.
Well, and that one I can't wait to cover because I've heard all about that as a fan, but I've never had the, I mean, and I've seen it before, but I've never had the opportunity to cover it on this show. So it's going to be really fun. Number 26 was Shawn Michaels, which it's really weird to see a young Shawn Michaels and him just right. being tossed out like a jobber. It's really weird.
Right.
The Barbarian, number 27. Rick Rude, 28. Hercules at 29. The star power is really going down.
And Mr. Perfect at number 30.
Yes.
And I really liked Mr. Perfect and Rick Rude teaming up on Hulk Hogan. I thought they would have made a great tag team because they're like best friends in real life, both from Minnesota.
Yeah, and speaking of Minnesota, It was mentioned and news broke last night on Raw that Ole Anderson, one of the original four members of the Four Horsemen, and the originator of the Minnesota Wrecking Crew back in the 60s, along with his brother. Yes, we do our research, motherfuckers. You don't know who the Minnesota Wrecking Crew is. You just heard it because he said it on Raw last night. Shut up. I hate people. No.
Damn.
No. But in all seriousness, rest in peace to Ole Anderson and you know, the fact that he's such an important part of wrestling history. You know, hopefully he'll continue to get the recognition that he deserves because I think that kind of lacked in later years because, you know, I think he had a falling out with WWE or something, if I remember correctly. But his contributions to both the Four Horsemen and professional wrestling cannot be denied. And I say speaking of Minnesota because, as I just said, Minnesota Wrecking Crew, along with his brother Gene Anderson, back in the 60s. I believe they formed in 68.
They formed in 66. Debut 66, disbanded in 1990.
Okay, so I was 2 years off, but I still know about the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. You know. Anyway.
Right?
Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the Rumble, we're going to take a break because we're already getting the notice that we're running short on time. So we'll be right back. Stay right there with the rest of Timeline Tuesday.
All right, we're back. We can conclude with the Royal Rumble match. And Ben, what do we have in this match?
So a couple of standout things. Like I said, when we were going through the participants, the action in the match really picked up after the Ultimate Warrior entered the match. So that's where the vast majority of my attention is going to go to. Okay, now, right before we do, I have to give a shout-out to Ted DiBiase, because he came in at number one and lasted 44 minutes until he was eliminated. So that he was definitely the Iron Man of this Rumble, for sure. Now, that being said, there were some cool moments, sprinkled throughout this Rumble. However, it really didn't become important or really logical until Ultimate Warrior came into the match. So, and that's because they were building up their match for WrestleMania 6. Now, I don't know about you, Elio. I don't know if it was you or if I read this or what. But originally, I heard that Mr. Perfect was supposed to win this Rumble. And then Hogan said, I'm getting the win. So, of course, there's positives. Well, there's a positive.
I'm gonna look that up. I'm not sure if I'm not sure. I'm gonna look it up for myself as well.
Now, there's a positive to that, which is it gives Hogan, the rub going into the match, which we know he lost. But also, we know that Hogan doesn't need it because he's the WWE champion. So why is he in the Rumble to begin with? Because, as we know, the Rumble would later become the winner gets a world title shot at WrestleMania, which is what in effect the match at WrestleMania 6 was between Hogan and Warrior. It was title versus title. So there's that to keep in mind. And then the final four, because the final couple entrants were really irrelevant, right? After Hogan came in, it was like irrelevant because Michaels was tossed out. I think Rick Rude came in. The Barbarian was after Michaels, then Rick Rude, then Hercules, and then Perfect. So the only one of the last four that mattered was Perfect. And the final four competitors were Hogan, Rude, Hercules, and Perfect. Now, I don't know how Hercules made it to the final four, because to me, he's nowhere near on the level of the other three. I just have no freaking idea.
Okay, Ben.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ben. You are correct. It said Mr. Perfect was originally booked to win the Royal Rumble match, but hours before the pay-per-view, Hulk Hogan vetoed the finish so that he would win it instead of Perfect.
What? Okay, well, I could say something about Hogan right there, but hasn't Hogan said enough about himself? You can see the look on my face.
Yes, yes. Fuck. What the fuck? You don't need to win a fucking Royal Rumble. You're the heavyweight champion, you dumbass.
Well, isn't that what I just said?
Yes, I'm just saying what the expression on your face is telling.
Precisely.
Go ahead.
No. I'm sorry. I'm absent-mindedly chewing. I'm sorry. I shouldn't do that. But That's what Hogan makes me do. He just makes me angry and I eat. Frosted Flakes decreases my rage.
That's a good cereal. I like that. Hang on, let me put that down on my shopping list.
Oh my god, he's literally putting it on his shopping list. Holy shit. So like I said, I'm not sure how Hercules made it to the final four, but I did like the fact that Rude and Perfect tried to team up on Hogan to get the one up on him, because as Elio reminded us, they do have the Minnesota connection and they are best friends in real life. So that was cool. Now, as for the other stuff, Hogan would eventually win, and I believe he eliminated Perfect with a few clotheslines. But instead of having the elimination happen because of a clothesline, he picked him up after clotheslining him several times and tossed him out like a sack of potatoes. Now, I realize like a sack of potatoes is a cliche expression, but literally that's exactly what happened.
And then this part made me mad. Perfect gave him the perfect flex, and he didn't even sell it. He just like got back up and started hulking up.
Well, and see, that's one of the drawbacks of Hogan, but then again, if I'm being fair, why would Perfect use the perfect flex?
I'm thinking in this sense, it's to weaken him so it's easier to throw him over the top rope.
Yeah, but how does the perfect flex usually end in a pinning combination? So it looks kind of weird.
Yeah. I guess he knew what he was doing, because it's the Rumble and he knows he can't win by pinfall. So he just hooked the leg and that's it.
Unlike Ronnie Garvin and Ray Valentine.
Right.
Who forgot the stipulation in their own goddamn match.
Maybe that's why they weren't in the Rumble, because they probably would have tried to go for pinfall after pinfall.
Well, that's probably perfectly logical, come to think of it. He's the professor for multiple reasons, folks. But yeah, overall the Rumble was very good. Like I said, easily the best of the three that I've seen on these early shows. Not that I haven't seen them before. I think I at least seen one or two before. But you know, it's just considering what wasn't at stake, it just took something away from it. And it's surprising considering that, you know, the Rumble started officially in 88, really 87, because remember, One Man Gang won the unofficial one, that stakes weren't added for 6 years when they were working on the formula and got it right on the third year. So that kind of doesn't make sense. Now, that's really all I can say about the Rumble. Do you have any other comments?
No, this Rumble was a fun Rumble. It was the better of the three that we've seen so far. And as we get further into the 90s, these Rumbles are just going to get better, like 91, 92, 93. Well, 93, okay. 94 was kind of whatever. But yeah, it's 95. That was a really weird year. When we get to that year, you're going to be like, what? What? What is going on?
Yeah. And that's going to be kind of new for me because, like I said, I started watching WWE in 96.
And so that's why I can't wait to get into the In Your House pay-per-views, because those are going to be fun. A lot of them I haven't even seen at all. I've never seen most of them that took place. So is that all we have for the Rumble?
Absolutely.
All right. So now we're going to travel back to the present day of February the 27th, 2024. To take a look at NJPW New Beginning from Sapporo, which featured Nick Namath's NJPW debut and Matt Riddle's NJPW debut.
Right, and you know, we're gonna skip the pre-show because if we included that, we'd be here all night long.
To watch the pre-show?
Was
there one?
But yeah, I mean, Technically, I did. What they're calling Tales from the Undercard was on the recording I watched. So apparently, I did, and I didn't realize it.
Okay, because I never told you to watch the pre-show. Well, either, like you said, yeah.
I didn't realize it was an undercard.
It's just good. So good.
Okay, anyway. So apparently the first match of substance was Zack Sabre versus Yuji Nagata.
Oh, yes. Blue Justice. I told you about this guy. He's been around since the beginning of Wrestle Kingdom, even participating in the events that would become known as Wrestle Kingdom, because prior to Wrestle Kingdom, they were called Wrestling World.
Very cool. You know, for a guy that they said he was 54, the commentary team did a fantastic job, first and foremost. I have to shout them out.
So, Ben, this is your first time seeing Blue Justice. What do you think of this guy?
For him being 54 years old, I was very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I think if Ric Flair was having these kind of matches at 54, I would have been more inclined to allow him to continue rather than feeling bad for him.
See, Ben, he's been there from the beginning. He made his debut on September 14th, 1992.
Jesus, I was only 4 years old. Makes me feel old. Makes me feel young as fuck. So thank you. I was kind of weirded out because I've been seeing a little too many gray hairs lately in the mirror. So I feel young. Thank you, Mr. Nagata. I really appreciate that.
All the gray hairs are from my movie posters.
Well, that and you just pissed me off.
All right, go on.
But yes, from what I saw of Yuji Nagata, I was very impressed. Now there was no doubt that Zack Sabre Jr. was gonna win this match. To me, it was disappointing coming off of, you know, his match with Bryan Danielson, you know, which was absolutely fantastic at Wrestle Kingdom. But honestly, I don't think I've ever seen a bad Zack Sabre Jr. match. Now, granted, I haven't seen a lot because I'm just now getting into the New Japan Pro Wrestling product. But now that I have a few of these shows under my belt and have seen more than clips of Zack Sabre Jr. online.
Also, before New Japan, he was also part of another company called RevPro. I can only take one match when we when we covered it in 2018. I don't think I could take more than one match of that company. That's like a British, UK-based company.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah.
And why didn't you like it?
I know, like, okay. It's like, I guess I wasn't used to seeing that style. Because that was like first time I've seen RevPro. So for me, it was, if I'm picking between RevPro and New Japan, I'd go New Japan. I like this style better.
Yeah. And I honestly really do like the New Japan product. It's weird given the fact that there are really no storylines, but the wrestling is so good that
the storylines are the events.
Yeah, exactly. Now speaking of being unfamiliar with something, I have to tell you, I have never seen a Stardom event in my life. Couldn't name you a Stardom wrestler if I tried. Right? Now, having said that, two of these ladies from Stardom competed for the new IWGP Women's Championship. The first holder being, I forget who, it might have been Mercedes Monet.
Mercedes Monet. Go on. I forget who they said, but it said there was Kairi, Mercedes Monet, and Mayu Iwatani.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. But this match, holy crap, this was...
I was sitting there watching every move. This was great match.
I was stunned. For me, this was the match of the night. But I mean, you know, and that's coming from a card that had Zack Sabre Jr., that had David Finlay, that had, you know, Matt Riddle, you know, Nick Nemeth, you know, a lot of really, really impressive guys. And for me, the ladies stole the show. And take nothing away from Zack Sabre Jr.'s match. That was a 3-star match, but I would rank this match higher than that. What do you think, Elio?
I don't know how you can follow that up, because for me, that was like match of the night. I liked everything about it from beginning to end.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm surprised it wasn't higher up on the card if that's what these ladies were capable of doing. Now,
again, don't put tag team after tag team after tag team, one after another. Don't do that. It makes it hard for us.
Yes. And then this was a low point with the House of Torture stuff. I just
You were asking me about the what was the big deal with them.
I just really don't get it.
You got Yujiro Takahashi, and like I was telling you, you got Bullet Club members that branched out off of Bullet Club and joined Evo to form this new faction, House of Torture. So it's a spin off of the Bullet Club.
Exactly. So it's just and show winning by count out over Evil was just kind of weird.
And show was you already know, show was tag team with EO Roppongi 3K.
Yeah, but he's associated with what am I trying to say?
No, I'm saying he was one half of Roppongi 3K before joining
House of Torture.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This was easily the low point of the night. I mean, this thing was just.
Actually, did you say show?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, the Spider-Man show. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, okay.
The first match I'm talking about was Desperado
Yeah,
and
okay.
Show.
Sorry, the website I'm looking at, it was on the picture of Evil and Shota Umino, so I was like, wait, what? So yeah, that was my bad. Go on.
Yeah, that's the next matchup. And really, there was nothing to that match either. That was
No.
very short. Very short.
Fifteen 45.
Well, it seemed like it was shorter than that because
Yeah.
I guess because the six-man tag with House of Torture before that. Which is the one we were just talking about with Randa Rita, Desperado, and stuff like that. No, that was a miss.
Yeah, a lot of the
Oh,
tag teams are just
hold
misses.
on, because I'm getting confused now because I could have sworn there was a six-man tag match, but it. But
No, there was a ten
where?
man and there was
Oh
eight
yeah,
men. Yeah, it's the second match, man.
Oh yeah, but I'm out of order here, so
Yeah,
the matches are out of order, so that's why I was kind of messed
it's a
up.
se it's a second match. Ren Narita, Ichiro Takahashi, and
Yes.
Yoshinobu Kanemaru.
Yeah, that was the one that I was talking about before or the one that I was trying to talk about before the one with Evil and Shota Umino, which was another low point. So those two back to back made this card a very long one in conjunction with the rest of the tag matches. Now,
Any of the feet that I have was 3 out of 338.
yes. Now it was a little bit shorter than that because they were because the 338 includes the commentary's comments after the fact and the interview with Nick Nemeth backstage. But yeah, the website I'm using, this shit is like way the fuck out of order. So that's why.
I'm gonna give you the New Japan website to use when like we do this next, like whenever we do something like this.
So I apologize for that, folks. That was my confusion, but hopefully we cleared that up. But yeah, so just to reiterate, the six-man tag with all the evils with all the House of Torture stuff, that was a low point. The one with Desperado and Sho, it wasn't like it was a bad match, but here's what I hated about it, right? Two things. One, the count out finish, because it's not like it's yes, they were fighting on the outside and blah blah blah, but it's not like the US version where it's 10 seconds and you can get lost in that. They have 20 seconds. And you should be able to keep track of 20 seconds. And the fact that in Japan titles change hands on a count out, that's very weird to me. I mean, I guess because it was House of Torture, I guess it kind of fits because they take shortcuts and stuff like that. So I guess it kind of fits, but like the whole House of Torture thing is really getting on my nerves already. And this match didn't really help it.
Ben's not a fan of the House of Torture. Okay.
Well, no, and but
No, I
even
know,
more so,
I get it. Never mind. Go on. Even
but
more.
even more so than the count out. You know what I hated the most? the chair shots. Because I don't like chair shots to the head anymore, but what the fuck is with these chairs? Do they have them rigged differently? Because these just explode. Do they do that so they don't hurt the guys as much?
I've never seen many chair shots like in the time I've been watching, so I couldn't tell you.
I mean, good God! But if you go back and watch this match again, you should count how many chair shots to the head there was. I didn't like that. And plus, it was weird with the chairs would just explode on contact. I swear to God, like the seat would pop out of the chair each time. So I don't know if they're rigged like that or what the fuck. But that seems dangerous to me.
Yeah.
So like I said, not a horrible match, but just not my cup of tea. I would say like 2.5. The 6-man tag was horrible. That was like 1.5 perhaps.
Yeah.
I didn't like that at all. Then we get to Matt Riddle defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi to claim the NJPW World
TV title. I can't believe, didn't he just win this?
Yeah, he did.
And already I'm losing to Matt Riddle.
And I get it. Matt Riddle's like the new blood in New Japan and things like that, but. And I don't mean any disrespect to Hiroshi Tanahashi. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not too terribly familiar with him because, like I said, I'm just getting into NJPW, but I do understand that he's one of the, pillars of that company. Like, I get all that.
I'm gonna give you the backstory on Tanahashi. He debuted in 1999.
Yeah. Wasn't he one of the Three Musketeers along with Shinsuke?
Three Musketeers. What?
Isn't that what you said?
No, you mean Chaos?
No. I thought you said he was one of like the originals with Shinsuke in Japan.
Yeah, I didn't say Musketeers. Said he was one of the originals. Wait. Actually, they had a match at one of the New Beginnings, the one in 2014.
Okay.
They were the main event.
Okay, very good. But this one, I mean, he looked every bit of his 47 years. I mean, good God. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if Matt Riddle had to slow down for him or whatever. I don't know if he wasn't familiar with Matt Riddle. But something was just very off about this match. I mean, it was just bad. I mean, the website that I'm looking at gives it 2 stars, but to me, that's being generous.
Yeah.
But the main event itself was very, very good. This was much more of the American style.
Actually, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you looking at me right now?
Yes.
Okay, give me a minute. I'm just looking for something. Check this out. This is what I was talking about. Sunday, February 2014. I made that for that one. Shinsuke and Tanahashi.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
You definitely make better posters.
That was the main event at New Beginning in Hiroshima.
But yeah, and so that's awesome. So the other high point of this evening, other than the women's match, was the main event with David Finlay and Nick Nemeth, aka Dolph Ziggler.
Yep.
But it was just. I was surprised how good this match was because You know, I expected him to struggle with New Japan being so different than WWE.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, this was kind of like a WWE style match, I thought. The most WWE style out of what I've seen from New Japan. But they did have like a hilarious moment with like Ghetto, is that his name, or Jito?
Ghetto.
So at one point, Dolph kicks Ghetto in the face after he's aiming for David Finley off a super kick and Ghetto ducks.
Now, Ben, did you call him Ghetto for a minute?
I don't know how to pronounce that.
So no, because it'd be good. No, and I'll tell you why. Because there's Ghetto and Ghetto. They were a tag team, actually. But Gato's when it stuck around, and it's in Bullet Club.
Oh, good Lord. Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny. I didn't even do that on purpose. So then after that, Dolph gets back in the ring, and eventually David Finley gets back up on the apron, and then he gets kicked off again, but he lands directly in the crotch of Gato. It's like, Ghetto was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, you can even swear, like, okay, you know the guy with the chain, Togi Makabe, right?
Yeah.
Like, in his match, there was one part where, like, he was slingshot in the ropes, and, like, he was laying on a mat. You can hear him actually swear and say, fuck.
Yeah, I heard that, too.
Like, damn, I'm like, wait a minute, what?
But not only did Ghetto say, oh shit, he also followed that up with fuck, and then the commentator Walker Short was like, oh, well, Ghetto providing his own commentary there, no need to follow up on that. But yeah, this was definitely a highlight match. This was a very solid showing for both guys. I like the triple threat match at Wrestle Kingdom a little bit more, to be honest with you. But like I said, I think this is just Nick's way of getting acclimated to New Japan, and this was a perfectly decent showing. And like I said, one of my two high points of the evening, if I'm being honest. And then I love the fact that they renamed the Zigzag the Danger Zone. Danger Zone is so much better than Zigzag. What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm really Zigzag. What? Stop it.
So what did you think of this match, Elio?
This was a great match. Of course, we have a new champion in... Feels so weird calling him Nick Namath. I mean, I know it's his name, but...
Yeah. And it really surprised me that he captured the title.
Yeah, well, it surprised me that Matt Riddle captured that television title.
Yeah, me too.
So, okay, usually the night after their debut, like, they debuted on the 23rd, so the night after, they put these champions in random tag team matches. Which is what we're going to get on the 24th. So, I mean, again, I don't expect you to watch everything. Like, you know what? I can send you the lineup and you pick out which one that you think would be good.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't even realize that it was a pre-show. The thing just started and I thought it was one cohesive show.
Because for real, there's like... there's a tag team match, then there's a 10-man tag team match. There's another 10-man tag match. Follow that. There's another regular tag team match. The fourth one is another tag team match. Like, if you want to skip all the tag team matches, go straight to the singles, you can do that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that. And we're running down on time, so we will stop right there, and we'll come back and give you proper stop.
Do we have anything else?
No. I don't think we do, but...
We can just wrap it up now, Sean.
Okay, very good. That works out. So that wraps up our review of Royal Rumble 90 and also New Japan's New Beginnings. There has been a little bit of a schedule switch. Instead of doing WrestleMania 6 and the Revolution post show, we're going to do the Revolution post show next Tuesday. As usual, that's what we usually do with pay-per-views, and then we'll bring back Timeline Tuesday the following week with WrestleMania 6. Stay tuned. We got plenty of content for you, and we'll see you next time.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.